Yes, you are now listening to the sounds of Sports Reports as Ordered. And these sounds are brought to you by the one and only, the world famous, the world renowned, born in Texas, raised in VA, representing New Jerusalem. And he got a message for Gayle King, Katy Perry, and Lauren Sanchez that John Glenn was the first American astronaut to orbit the Earth by way of New Jersey, by the way. And what y'all did, this ain't horseshoes. He is Mr. Logical. Don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
Then you got I, your unorthodox statistician, E equals minus 2.5 square. We up in here. We got playoff previews. We're going to talk about the play-in. I'm going left so much you thought I was southpaw with a liquid death in hand. I go by the name of 2.5. So like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things. So, this week, Mr. Logical,
yeah,
there's been something going on referred to as the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the NBA Cup or in-season tournament.
Yeah.
Even though they're both stupid. So that's the one thing they do have in common. It's basketball and it's stupid. So, Mr. Yeah. Logical, real quick. I know, generally speaking, you are usually the longer-winded one of us two. But
I am.
But just bear with me for a second.
All right.
So this season, this year, is the perfect reason of why I don't like the play-in. This season played it out perfectly than I could have ever explained it, right? Because when I look at this, you know, you're playing for the 7 and 8 seeds. The Miami Heat, even though they beat the Bulls last night, they finished 4 games behind the 7th seed, 3 games behind the 8. And it ain't just the East. Look in the West. The Sacramento Kings finished 8 games behind the Warriors and Grizzlies, who were in 7-8 coming into this play-in tournament. Dallas, 9 games behind both of them. Why are they playing for a spot in the playoffs?
Last year, generally on this show, I've been pro play-in because I looked at the entertainment aspect from March through April. Because, like you said, the Kings, 8 games back of 8th place when the season ended, they probably were hovering around 8 to 9 or 10 for most of the time post All-Star break. So you might rest the player here. You're still charging full price for the tickets. Sabonis might not play. This other guy, you know, Malik Monk might not play because of, you know, a tight hamstring or something like that. Whereas with the play-in, you kind of give the player something to play for because, like, listen, yeah, we're in 10 right now. But we stay in 10. We play it out. Maybe we have a chance to knock off 9 and then subsequently knock off 7 or 8 to get the 8th spot. I used to like it. Now I don't. This is a prime year why I don't like it. Because I feel like the Warriors and Grizzlies, they played themselves into a position where they kept enough distance away from the people behind them that these people shouldn't be able to catch up when they pause the race. Like, all right, you guys can catch up now. Now start from here. It's like, no, like I've outpaced you for months. For the last 30 games, my record's been better than yours. I extended whatever lead. We started off at 0-0. I have an 8-game lead on you. You shouldn't just be able to trump my, you know, that's a tenth of the season.
Right.
You know, so you get to trick off 10 games and then get to scramble back at the end. And now I'm out here playing for my playoff life when I've already done my work. I've already done all
the work. You sound like me when we first had this conversation.
And that's the thing. I think originally the NBA wasn't expecting Golden State and the Lakers to be like the first team in the play-in. So they were like, oh, damn. But they also, they were like, well, now we got LeBron playing every night. We got Steph playing every night. We're selling tickets, so forth and so on. But, I mean, if you think about it, well, the Suns are just way out of it. They pretty much gave up. But if you look in the East, the Raptors were like, yeah, we're done. They didn't try to fight for 10. So, like I said, I just feel like the play-in, if they can change it and go do away with it for next season, I'd be all for it. Let these teams, 9 and 10, fight to get 8. And if they can't make it to 8, then they got to look their fans in the face when they're still charging $175 for a ticket when they are, you know, 30 and 42 after 72 games.
Yeah.
That's on them. That's on the organization. The NBA can't take on all those responsibilities. The NBA from the office, from the top of the mountain, can't try to legislate entertainment from the top when the people who are doing it need to facilitate that.
Yeah, and you know, the Kings, Orlando and Atlanta had 40 wins. Everybody else didn't, you know, and it's not just this year because, you know, the first year of the play-in, the Spurs finished 5 games, you know, behind the 9 seed. So they were the 10 seed and they finished 5 games behind number 9. You know, in the second year, the Pelicans, they were 10 games behind the 7 and 6 behind the 8. And then the Spurs finished 2 games behind them. You know, last year.
And the Pelicans almost beat the Lakers. Last year, if Zion didn't get hurt. Yeah.
Like the Bulls the Bulls finished 8 games behind Miami, 7 games behind Philly. And these are the teams that we're advocating for. So think about it like this. This is how I like to think about it. When the college football playoff expanded and we went to 12 teams, you know, the talk was, hey, there's not 12 teams that can win this title. You know, like how many, once you get past number 5 or number 6, who's going to win? Boise can't win the title. So I'm sitting up here looking at this play-in tournament, and the NBA is even worse because that's a one-game scenario where an upset could happen. We're talking about a 9 or 10 potentially getting into the playoffs, and you got to beat OKC or Boston 4 times?
Like hypothetically. I think not.
You know what I'm saying? Like, or Cleveland.
Like, so not. Miami could be the 8 seed after tomorrow night, correct?
Yes.
Miami has 37 wins on the season.
Yes.
They're going to play 64-win Cleveland.
27-game difference.
And I know the Hawks are at 40 wins.
Still under 500. But at least they're at
under 500, but at least that format is like, hey, we got to get 16 teams and we got to get 16 teams in. We're not making special provisions to get this team that's under 500 in. You locked in. It's like the leagues for some reason are looking at the potential of making more money versus the potential for real competitiveness. Like the NFL, when they went to 17 games, I'm like, why are you at an odd number? Why? Why are you playing an odd number of games? Like, it just blows my mind every game. I don't like the odd number of
games. I like it because it, like, in most cases, you know, you should end up with some kind of definition or tiebreaker. Because, like, you know, with a 16-game schedule, you could both finish 8-8, and then we got to try to figure this shit out. Well, like, yeah, you could still finish 9-8. But
common opponents, so forth and so on. I just figure, like, they wanted 18 games for money. It wasn't a competitive thing. It wasn't as if the 16 games didn't give you – the 16 games gave you – it wasn't a snapshot of who's good, who's bad. It was a full movie of who was good and who was bad. And the playoffs was the extra credit scene at the end of the movie. It was like you got the whole story. These 16 games gave you everything. But for more money, they just added this one game. NBA – for more money, they added the play-in. And I get it. Like, you want to make sure the fans have the experience. But what's the point? There's still going to be teams that are terrible. You can't do anything. What are you going to have, a tournament for the teams that don't make the playoffs?
So
and that's gonna be another like that's gonna be like an NIT.
You know what though? Like, I don't want to give Adam Silver any ideas, but you could do that for draft picks. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing about it, right? Whoever doesn't get in this playoff out of the play-in goes right into the draft lottery. So, yeah, like,
that's the thing. Like,
get rid of that too.
We had a saying in the Air Force. You probably heard it before. Fix it till it's broke.
Yeah.
Where it's like, listen, this process is working just fine. Like, nah, I think we can make it. I was not necessarily in an argument at work, but I remember we had like a transition of leadership. Some people came out, some people came in, and they were looking at the process from like a helicopter view, and they were just kind of looking. They're like, oh, I can save that. And I remember I got to sit in my chair with a guy. I'm like, listen, you're not saving me any time by trying to change all this. You're making it longer for me because now I got to comb through this unprofessional looking document to find this information. It's like, only thing that's going to make this flow smoothly is if you task the people, they know they're being tasked and they have the training and medical stuff up to date, and we can put this stuff together. That's the holdup. The holdup isn't me putting these PDF files together. Like, that's not the problem. You're trying to fix the wrong problem. I'm like, you're not safe. He's like, we could save like 30 minutes. So 30 minutes for what? What are we doing with that 30 minutes saved? The flight is in 2 days. Why am I trying to save 30 minutes on Wednesday when they don't get on the jet until Friday? Like, what are we in a hurry for? Like, let's make it right, and then they can figure it out on the back end. I think that's what the NBA is doing. It's like, teams need to be competitive. They need to draft better. They need to not fire coaches. They need to be – now, like, Phoenix is going to have three coaches getting paid, like, $75 million over the next, like, few years.
Yeah, like, still got to hire another one.
And you got to hire another one. And he's going to take a mean-ass deal because, like, listen, I seen what you did with the last three dudes.
And like, why not just have – if you wanted to do this, why not just do it NCAA tournament style where 7 plays 10, 8 plays 9, and then you just reseed if necessary. So if 7 wins, they get 7. If 10 and 8 win, whatever, like, you know, just do something like that. You know, even I don't want that either, but I'm just saying
that's what,
like,
I'm saying. That's
I don't
that's
even like I mean. The format of it. But see, the NBA
we're trying to figure we're trying to make sense out of what is essentially nonsense.
But to your point though, the NBA got lucky because, you know, this is the Warriors' fourth time in the play-in. You know, the Lakers have been in there 2 or 3 times. So one, if there was no play-in, you know, then somebody like the Lakers and Warriors go out earlier. You know what I mean? But the Warriors just won their first play-in game when they beat.
Or they're locked in the 7. You know, like, for instance, the Western Conference this year. Let's pull it up real quick.
Yeah, so you got OKC 1, you got Houston 2.
So right now, all the playoff spots. So Grizzlies are 9 games ahead of the Mavericks.
Yes, right? And they're playing tomorrow with a chance for the Mavericks to get in.
So in the play-in scenario, when LeBron and the Lakers and Steph and the Warriors were in it for like the original year, they had to keep playing those games. Whereas this year, the Mavs behind 9 games against the Grizzlies, maybe Ja rests. He rests for a couple of games. And I think that's what the NBA kind of benefited from, is like, okay, the superstar players are in this playoff window or play-in window. So now they got to play, so we get more highlights of Ja, we get more highlights of Steph and so forth and so on. But what happens when he really needs rest? He, whomever he is, whether it's Ant, Ja, Steph, whoever is there.
Butler's got a bum wheel right now.
And they pull up lame, hamstring, roll an ankle, or just, you know, how
I rolled his ankle the other night.
When sometimes you're just tired and, you know, because you needed that rest, but you got to play, you make a mistake. You know, or somebody, you know, just because you're not necessarily forcing them to play extra games, but you're not allowing them to like prepare for this next round, which is also your moneymaker. So I just feel like whatever money they're getting from the play-in energy and the play-in atmosphere that they created, I think it can't trump the playoff atmosphere, because that's what most people lock in. If you think about college basketball, most people aren't college basketball fans. So like, March 7th, March 8th. That's when everybody starts posting about, oh, blah, blah, this is going to be the team this year. This is going to be the upset. I'm picking St. Mary's.
You that's know, why they tried to do the in-season tournament, you know, but all they did was paint courts and wear weird uniforms.
I thought I liked the court thing. It's just, it might be a little too much. But once again, I understand that piece because that's in the middle of the season. You're butted up against football, college football. I get that you want to capture the holiday spirit, the football. Everybody's kind of like, it's a lot of time. People at home, a lot of people spend a lot of time watching the TV. It's getting colder around the country. So you want to be able to draw the attention of the fan. I understand that part in December. I understand
it too, but
right now you have the format. You have NFL conversations. You got early season baseball, and then you have hockey. Hockey doesn't promote to the entire country to the exhaustion that the NBA does. You have this. Like, you are dancing in the middle of the circle. You don't need to do the backflip and the split. Just keep doing your dance. Everybody's watching you. Just keep doing your dance. But they're like, nah, we got to do the split. I got to wear the shiny vest. I got to do the Michael Jackson. Like, you're doing too much. You already have all the attention on you because this is your time. April to June is the NBA's bag. Because the NFL, we have talks about the NFL, but you can't beat Donovan Mitchell going up against Trae Young and one guy gets 40 and the other guy gets 44. You have that already built into your league. You don't need this other stuff to try to matriculate in to create more money.
I understand why they're doing the in-season tournament. I understand why they're doing it. The problem is that it's the same basketball. So, like, for example, you know, FIBA, different rules and all that kind of stuff. You know, you go to the Olympics, it's a different, you know, different rules and all this kind of stuff like that. Whereas when you're watching the in-season tournament, it's no different than watching any other basketball game.
But that's why you do the floor and the jersey. You can sell more jerseys and you sell the trophy idea. Like I said, that I need you to see something different when you look at the NBA in that time, because that is the quintessential football window. College and NFL, you have to be able to compete, because the NFL does like their different jerseys and they have Thursday night, they have Monday night, they have the holidays. Like, they pretty much take over December. So you have to have something that really stands out. So the floors and the jerseys make sense. But that's in a time where you're actually competing with another league. You're not competing with anybody right now. Right now, you are the biggest show on Broadway. And you're worried about the shows that are off Broadway.
Right.
That's my piece. And like I said, this year it could have backfired.
No, 100%. And, you know, I mean, we'll see, you know, we just got to have a play in that doesn't have stars, I guess, because I mean, essentially you're watching, and I know Orlando's 141, they're 41-41. The Hawks are 40-42. And then the Kings, I think 140. So like, you have teams that have won 40 games, but what you're telling me is, we're marking out over watching mediocre for a couple of nights, you know, for what? Just to see who's going to be led to the slaughter. So, Mr. Logical, with that being said, it is time. It is time for us to talk about the actual playoffs. Now, obviously, we don't know who OKC is matched up with right now. We don't know who Cleveland's matched up with right now. But I'm just going to go ahead and spoiler alert that we're going to pick them to win that series. Yeah. Cleveland and Oklahoma City. So I'll just say it like this. If it's Memphis, I give Memphis one game. If it's Dallas, it's a sweep. You know, for the Cavs, they're sweeping either way.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that.
That's easy. Those are easy.
So let's start with my favorite series. You know, the series that's closest to me. The Golden State Warriors. Game one, coming down to the Lone Star on Sunday night to play the Houston Rockets. Mr. Logical, are you giving the young boys a puncher's chance?
Absolutely.
Oh.
And I think the piece – I'm picking Houston outright. Absolutely. There's no reason for me to think that they're going to be able to overwhelm Houston's defense with the lineup, the offensive lineup that they put out on the floor for Golden State. It just, there's not enough players that demand specific defensive planning. Like, I can play Jimmy Butler straight up. He's not gonna shoot a lot of threes. So I can play him straight up. I can put a man on him straight up. And then I can defense by committee on Steph, or I put a man on Steph and then defense by committee on
Jimmy. I was going to say, wouldn't you put Dylan Brooks on Jimmy?
But it's just like, I mean, either way, I just figure I can use one defensive player and have him one-on-one with Jimmy in that offense, because Jimmy doesn't move like Steph. And he doesn't threaten you from distance like stuff. Yeah, he gets a lot of foul calls. And if the whistle is flowing, then yeah, I think they have a shot. But 8 seconds left on the shot clock, Steph has to pass the ball to Jimmy. Jimmy's getting crowded. Jimmy has to pass the ball. Whoever that other person is who gets the ball, if it's not Steph or Jimmy, I'm not sure that they're going to be effective in that moment, which is going to happen. You're going to get down to where, because you're going to set up your dribble, everything else. You're going to make you move in 14 seconds. The big is going to show. You're going to have to move the ball. If you get it to Gary Payton the second, he's not shooting. I saw the highlight the other day. Draymond threw him a lob at the rim. He catches it and throws out two-handed overhand pass up to Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield breaks a wide-open three to get the scramble rebound. Steph Fisher three, audience goes crazy. I'm like, why didn't you just lay the damn ball up? But like, it's just like, it's so ingrained in them not to shoot the ball. Then Houston's going to shut that down.
So I want to call this Ime's revenge. You know, he went up against Golden State in 2022, his last year as Boston's coach in the NBA Finals. And hopefully he took some things away from that series, which I believe he has. The questions that I have about this series are, one, are we going to see Jonathan Kuminga? Two.
Yeah, he's done. He's done.
Yeah, he might be. Two, but I think they might need him to win this series. Two.
He don't care.
Two.
Listen, these guys are professional. I'm not trying to be an ass, but like, you shitted on me for the last 2 years. You didn't make me the focal point of anything. I've been the verbalized outcast for over 2 years. And now all of a sudden, at the end of April, you're going to call on me because now they're trapping Jimmy and you need somebody young and athletic. I ain't him. My hamstring tight.
All right. So, two, can Houston score in the clutch game-defining moments? Three, what the refs going to be on? And the only reason I bring that up is because I know the refs change game to game. Some call it tic-tac. Some call it physical. Some let them play. All that kind of stuff. But if you see what I see in this bracket, you could get Lakers-Warriors next round. I don't trust these refs.
Oh, you're saying that someone's going to do a little sleight of hand, a little David Blaine, and
yeah,
make sure we get this matchup in the second round.
You know, so the problem
for me, I don't want to go that far yet until I see a game.
So the problem for Houston
two
is...
Games. I need two games.
Two games, which are both in Houston. So I don't know what both we're going to get.
If I'm getting the allowed physicality that's being managed, where it's like, hey, that's too far, you know, and the free throws are, I don't know how many teams, say the free throws are 27 for Golden State and 21 for Houston. All right, that makes sense. But if it's the fourth quarter and Jimmy Butler is shooting 8 free throws and Steph shot 8 and Houston only got 2 and Golden State only committed 2 fouls in Houston, then I'm like, I'm never conspiracy theory, but it's like, that's when you're going to know, okay, the refs are too involved. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a business. You know, Dylan Brooks has hit 40% of his threes this season for the first time in his career. But out of all the regular Rockets that play, so not your Jock Lindales and people like that, but your regular Rockets, there's only one other player that's above 35% from three. So if you have to chase points, I don't know if the Rockets can do it. Now,
yeah, but give me one dude on the Warriors that's over 6'8", that's going to stop you inside the paint.
All right, hold on. We're going to get to that. So, yeah. so that now, you know, I know the Rockets have been running out this lineup lately with Shai Gilgeous and Steven Adams out there. So theoretically, you have to play Kevon Looney. But how long can you play Kevon Looney? That's the question, because he doesn't give you enough offense. You know,
give you enough offense, and he, people talk about those old Warriors teams, and it's something that I was thinking about already, because I feel like the absence of a big, I think a big and an NFL running back are treated the same way. It's like people act as if paying them is like, you can't pay a big this much, he doesn't shoot threes. You can't pay a running back this much, he doesn't catch, you know, he doesn't catch 1,000 yards worth of, you know, receiving yards. But when it comes down to it, where in the playoffs, the edge you need is going to be physicality. The running back is the definition of how physical your running game is, the definition of how physical you are as a football team. Your ability to defend the paint is a definition of how physical you are as an NBA team. Because a dude can just straight up miss a three.
Yeah.
The likelihood of an NBA player going 4 for 10 inside the paint is very unlikely, uncontested. But a guy can be wide open for 10 threes and still go 4 for 10 in an NBA game, or get 10 good looks. You give a guy 10 good looks 5 to 7 feet from the hoop, he's probably knocking down 7 of those easy. Any player. Yeah, even if a guy doesn't shoot a lot. So Golden State not having that presence, at least not being able to sustain it, because they can't play Kevon Looney for that long, because he gives you nothing on the other end.
So I just need the Rockets to not go 0 for 27 from three. How's that for a callback?
Yo, just pump fake and lay up. Like, listen, but, James, tell these dudes to pump fake and lay it up. That's all I was saying back then.
See, now this is the problem, right? So I brought up the lineup with Shai Gilgeous and Steven Adams on the floor at the same time. So you still got Jabari Smith, you know, who's 6'10 as well, you know, but he's lanky and can do all the dribble things, the, you know, low budget KD stuff, you know. So, but this is the problem. So the Warriors have a lineup that when they're on the floor together, they're the 6th best defense in the NBA. But this is the problem. That lineup is Steph Curry, Podziemski, Jimmy Butler, Moody, and Draymond, which goes back to your original point.
And you said Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler just got there.
I know, but that goes back to
ranking them as the 6th best defense. Yeah. It's kind of fool's gold, because it was literally less than a quarter of the season.
Right, and it goes back to your point of who's the defender that's over 6'8". You know, that's going. So you got to put Kevon Looney on the floor. Quentin Post is big as far as he's bigger than them, but he's not necessarily a big body as a center. You know, but you might need him to stretch the floor and pull one of Shai Gilgeous and Adams out of the paint. But the problem is that he has even less experience than the Rockets do.
Yeah. So, none of the Warriors shoot. None of the guys outside of your core, like, shoot. Like, Gary Payton literally was at the rim, caught the ball in the air, and threw a two-handed overhead pass to Buddy. Like, just lay the ball up.
Right.
Just, you're right there. But it's like, it's ingrained in them not to do that, just to look for the three. It's like, you're right at the rim, lay the ball up.
And then last question.
The Warriors are going to get beat badly in this. I'm going to Houston in 5. I'm not even going to play around with it. Houston in 5. So, gentlemen sweep. So like, I don't even know why we're playing around with this. As a sports media culture and society, we are literally trying to act as if a man in a fist fight with one hand has a chance against a guy with two big, strong-ass hands.
I'm going to tell you why I'm playing around with it. So my last question, though, is what's Jimmy Butler's motor at this point? Because, you know, he's got the bum leg, even though he was getting all the free throws the other night. But he's older, so you're not going to get that Jimmy Butler from the bubble. You're not getting that guy anymore. So
we halfway through 2025.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, that motor is done. So with that being said, look, we saw this last year, or was it 2 years ago? Whichever year it was, Warriors and Kings. You know, new kids on the block. The Kings could score with the Warriors, but couldn't stop them. Steph put up 50 in Game 7. You know what I mean? So when I look at this,
he also had Jordan Poole that could actually make the defense adjust. He had Klay that could make the defense adjust. There's not a single person on that, Golden State or my bad.
I was just about to say, we just stopped playing around.
Houston gonna beat the brakes off of Golden State.
I was just about to say something along those lines.
Here we go. We've done this show a lot, a long time.
So what I was gonna say, was this Warriors team is probably like not as good as that team. Houston doesn't have the offense that Sacramento have, but they have the defense that Sacramento didn't have. So I'm still going to give the Warriors three games in this series just based off of
what?
I don't know what the refs are going to do. Yeah, I don't know what the refs are going to do. I told you, I don't know what the refs are going to do. Steph's going to have one game where he explodes. I don't know what the refs are going to do.
But he also is going to have a game where he goes 4 for 13 and has 16 points.
And the Rockets are still inexperienced and don't know how to win yet. So they might lose a game, one of those Duke games, like that Duke-Houston game. They might lose something like that. So I'm giving the Warriors three. I'm taking the Rockets in seven to beat up.
I got the Rockets in five, man. I'm not even like – it's
– You taking the Lakers in five?
Over Minnesota?
Let's get to it. Okay, let's hear it.
And the same reason why I think Golden State's going to have problems is the same reason I think Minnesota – I think Minnesota's going to give the Lakers problems. It's this the conversation you and I had about Gabe Vincent, Dorian Finney-Smith. LeBron and Luka are going to consistently give you what they give you because there's 6 to 8 spots on the floor for both of them where they know I can make these infinite amount of things happen. Luka knows if he dribbles to this wing and he calls for this pick and roll, the defense has to do this. I'm going to make this happen because I'm that level of basketball player. LeBron, I'm this level of basketball player where I get to this spot. This defender is going to have to come guard me. I'm going to kick to Austin Reeves. He's going to be open for the three. I'm going to be able to kick to the corner to Gabe Vincent. Those two guys know that. The issue for me always will be the role players that don't give you much on both ends. Rui gives you length and size and defense, and he's a slasher. He gets to the rim, gets you layups, decent free throw shooter. That's a bonus. Gabe Vincent, a guy you want in rotation because he's a shooter, he's not like a great on-ball defender. He doesn't average a bunch of steals. And if he's not knocking down that three, you got to pull him out. Same thing with Dorian Finney-Smith. I know he has a great relationship with Luka. And if he's hot from three, that's good. The problem is the Lakers are going to need 65 first half points to feel confident going into halftime because your star, Luka, kind of always, you know, he's not like super just athletically gifted where he can just kind of rev it back up. And LeBron's an older guy. So you can't go into halftime 57-54 and these guys got to come out at 100%. Full speed starting the third, they got to work their way back in. So they're going to need to get to 60 points in the first half. The only way to get to 60 points in the first half is those guys knocking down threes because they can't defend at the rim. They're a good team rebounding because, like, your guards are 6'8 and 6'9 with Luka and LeBron. So they get a lot of rebounds, but it's not a lot of defense at the rim. LeBron's not protecting the rim. Jackson Hayes is not a big body. I just feel like Minnesota falls in love with the three, then I think the Lakers will be fine. But if they decide, you know what, we're gonna attack the paint, we're gonna attack some of these mismatches we have 1-on-1. You know, guys are gonna hunt Luka in the pick and roll. I just feel like it's more of a toss up.
Question: before I jump in here, who does Anthony Edwards guard in this series? Does he guard Austin Reeves?
I put him on Austin Reeves.
Okay. All right. So this is my thing, right? So I actually want to pick Minnesota to win this series, but I can't do it because they got somebody on their team.
Yeah. And they got a guy that you feel doesn't make winning basketball plays in crunch
right.
time.
And it's not even about, you know, just, hey, he sucks or anything like that. But in his career so far, he just hasn't been there in the playoffs. He just hasn't shown up.
And Rudy Gobert does get hunted too. So
right. So that's what I was about to bring up, because you talked about how the Lakers don't have the rim protection. But I don't know, outside of Ant, I don't know if Minnesota has anyone that's just going to be challenging the rim. You know,
well, I think Gobert can challenge the rim because that's what he does well.
I mean, he catches lobs and stuff, but I don't think he's going to be posting up and turning and hitting hook shots.
I'm talking about the Lakers defensively at the rim.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I'm talking about Ant slashing down, Naz Reid. I'm just talking about like those plays when they kind of break down, or like the pick and roll, like the guy doesn't show well or something like that, and they can get to the paint, because you're not going to shoot 75 threes. You're going to have to get into the paint.
So I think if I'm the Lakers,
your shots. I think you can get over to the rim on the Lakers.
If I'm the Lakers, I'm letting Ant average 37. Like, you know, I'm not letting anybody else get anything remotely.
You're staying glued, the Steve Nash approach.
Yeah. And so, but if I was Minnesota,
Luka cook or you let LeBron cook?
You got to force LeBron to cook you, I think. You know, just because of his age, you got to.
I don't think that's the part. I don't. The Lakers Luka's are probably already, the one team where I don't think you could do it.
Luka's
gonna get. He's gonna get to his spot, even if you try to like just let him do it.
Or Jalen McDaniels. I remember him trying to guard Luka last year.
So he's gonna get to his spot. He's gonna get and he shoots the ball from everywhere. Like I said, the same thing with LeBron. So that's the advantage that they have, is that both of them can get you. You can get 49 to 52 points from those two guys off of just everything they know pregame.
So I
just
wonder,
not even the flow of the game. Like, you just know, like, hey, LeBron and Luka gonna get us 26, 28 to 24.
So I wonder if it's counterproductive, because you were talking about the Lakers' lack of rim protection. Yeah. But I wonder if it might be a little more advantageous for Minnesota to go small and try to push the pace, you know, because they
won't be able to defend at all if they go small.
The problem is this ain't Memphis Mike Conley that we're talking about. So, you know, so small, I'm guessing, would be Conley, Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Julius Randle, and Naz Reid. I feel like that would probably be your small lineup.
The problem is you have the ability
to stretch them out, but like you said, you don't want Minnesota to fall in love with the three.
They're going to probably fall in love with the three. And
that's going to be their demise.
The advantage that the Lakers have, and why I would pick the Lakers over Minnesota, even though I think the Lakers, their interior defense, because of just the lack of a big body where LeBron and Luka don't have to be the one looking for rebounds. Just a guy, you know, like, you know, Steven Adams, when that ball goes up, he's likely to come down with the rebound. But him and Shingu in Houston. Same thing with like even Draymond and Golden State, you know, or just like DeMont Sabonis in Sacramento. Some team just know, like, yo, my guy down there is too big. He's going to get the rebound. Jackson Hayes doesn't give you that same kind of confidence. So that's one thing, because defensive rebound is part of defense as well.
Right.
The problem that Minnesota's going to have is that they don't have the luxury of doing what the Lakers can do, as far as like, yo, we go let Ant put up 26 shots if he wants to. But Naz Reid, you get 8 contested shots. Every three-pointer you put up, it's going to be Austin Reeves in your face, Rui in your face. Even if we got to put Gabe Vincent on you, just another body, a rock in your shoe, just on you. Whereas you try to do that with the Lakers, LeBron's going to take 4 straight possessions and get 8 points, because he sees it coming. He knows what's coming. So he's going to take the ball down, like, let me get to my spot, get these 4 quick layups, get 8 points, make them call a timeout, make them shove their strategy up, and now I'm going to let Luka cook. That's the difference.
Do you think that White Dante can semi-match Austin Reeves?
No, because I think the confidence that Reeves has from playing with LeBron for so many years, LeBron knows when Austin's on one, and Austin knows when LeBron is like, yo, I'm chilling. You do you. You know, like, hey, look, right now for this next 2-3 possessions, I'm decoying in the corner. you take whoever guarding you one on one. Me, Luka could be chilling. But 8 seconds left in the shot clock, your shot ain't right. Get it to me and him, and we'll make something happen. I think that's the advantage that they have, is that he has so much confidence, and he doesn't play with like, you're giving me confidence. He's playing with his confidence, and they're recognizing it. Whereas like sometimes, like Ant might just be feeding the ball to Naz Reid, and he starts feeling it, or he feeds the ball to McDaniels, he starts feeling it. Austin Reeves know like J.J. Redick's going to call right up, draw plays for him. When the score is 22-22, you know, in the first quarter, something like that. Like, he knows, like, hey, I'm part of this.
Yeah.
I'm not an afterthought.
So give me the grape and urine in 6.
Bean pies, apple pies.
Lakers all that, huh?
Yeah. I'm gonna say, Lakers in 5 sounds excessive, but like I said, if they switch Gobert onto Luka at any point in game 1, Lakers in 5.
Chris Finch got to get fired if that happens.
If they do it, if it's 88-88 and it's been like a back and forth thing, and they, you know, JJ Redick calls a timeout and Luka has the ball and they call that switch and Gobert switches out on them, and if they do that, then Lakers in 5 is a realistic thing. Lakers in 5 sounds funny, but like 6 is more realistic. So I'm going to say Lakers in 6.
Okay. Then we got little brother L.A., you know what I'm saying, starting off a series with the maybe MVP, Nikola Jokic. You know, Jamal Murray's back. You know, he's been kind of awful these last 2 games, you know, 11 of 28 overall.
He's a weird player. He's good. He looks good, but he's never made an all-star team.
Mm-hmm. And it's strange
for how good he looks when he's on.
You got the Clippers riding high, you know, after that win against Golden State the other day. Maybe a little bit too long off for them to ride that momentum into game 1. But Mr. Logical, take it to Clippers.
That's your – you know me. I'm always like – I'm trying to fill out like the continuity of the teams. I don't know if Denver has – the continuity you need for the playoffs.
Okay.
I think the allegedly the reported rumors were Malone was kind of really inundated and just really to a fault respected Westbrook's career and his energy, and it kind of rubbed players the wrong way. I just have a feeling in those crunch time moments, Russ is going to step up and want to be the leader, get people motivated. And when people don't really rock with you in that huddle and you're trying to lead them, it's going to like turn, you know, and it's petty. Yeah, it's petty.
Yeah.
Whereas when, you know, another Cross Sports reference, a lot of the New England players said when they were down 28-3, and Tom Brady was talking to them about, we're going to win this game. Like, Julian, like, people really believed it. Like, the sideline really believed it. And then when they got it to, like, what was it, 28-9, and then, like, 20, like, when they started to score, it was like, they really started to believe. Like,
hey, what he was saying.
Yeah, so they really believed it. I just feel like if Russ does that, people already kind of like, especially if the reports are true, you know how, like, rumors are.
Right.
I just feel Jokic could have a big series, but Zubac is big enough and kind of moves at the same pace as Jokic, so he could.
Well, I'm glad slow you said down. That. Of all the players that have guarded Jokic for at least 30 minutes this season, Zubac has held him to the lowest percentage.
So, like, that could be tough because frustration is going to set in. Kawhi is going to be physical. Chris Dunn's going to be physical. James Harden's going to be kind of herky-jerky, maybe give you a silly foul call and like kind of just – so I want to pick the Nuggets, but I just have a feeling that firing your coach that late in the season because of internal turmoil with the players, I just feel like that has to impact their playoff performance, and I think they're going to lose this series probably in 6. Off of that, because I think Tyronn Lue, he has guys locked in. They're 9-1 their last 10 games. They're locked in.
So I got Clippers in 6, but I'm not going to use any of the reasons that you said.
Okay.
I got different reasons. You know what I mean? Like, they all apply. Like, your reasons are good, but I got other reasons, and that's why I'm picking the Clippers, because I think I just have too many advantages here. So one, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but the coaching matchup, Ty Lue against
Adam. Okay, just got his job.
Yeah.
Beginning this month. Oh,
that's number one. Number two, you remember I always talk about the 2008 finals where, you know, Paul Pierce gets the credit for guarding Kobe a lot, but they had James Posey and Keon Clark, and they were just throwing the bodies at Kobe, right?
Correct.
So the Clippers have, you know, Chris Dunn, Amir Coffey.
Resurrected his career.
Yeah, Amir Coffey, you know, Nick Batum, Ben Simmons. You know, you could get Harden a few minutes just for breathers or whatever if you need those. Norm Powell, that you can all put on Jamal Murray. So if Jamal Murray goes off at any point.
And we know he gets cold and then he gets hot. So yeah. If he's cold and,
but I got
and
five he's down the right guy, throw at you that all come with
I got the right things. I got the right one on you, yeah.
Right. And they all come with different advantages, you know, Batum, the long arms in the defense, Ben Simmons, you know, can
experience
force you into spaces, you know. So like I got different reasons. So then will the real Michael Porter please stand up? Where he at? Milk bottle status.
He got that Gabe Vincent effect. Like, if you're not knocking down the three, what are you giving me?
So if I'm the Clippers, the number one rule is I need Jokic on the bench. So I'm coming at your chest every time because you're not a shot blocker. You know, so
you think you're going to get him two cheap fouls?
I'm going to try to because, you know, the Nuggets are, you know, minus 9.3 with him off the floor. You know what I'm saying?
I think he'll give you a layup.
Worst defensive, maybe, but that's even better. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to give me the layup, I'll take that all day too. You know, Kawhi didn't play against the Nuggets this year, so they don't have that to, you know, to prepare for, I guess. You know, like that's another new element. So Denver to win this series is going to have to get a lot of transition. That transition comes from Christian Brown, you know, but I don't know if he can get off against these guys either. You know, so Russ, you brought up Russ. We know if nothing else, he is going to physically sabotage at least one game in this series, trying to be the hero. Like you talked about him from the huddle experience. I'm talking about him taking a shot that he don't need to take, you know, missing a layup, bad errant pass at the worst time.
I think Russ would, I don't think he'll take like a bad shot. Oh, I just think he'll go 4 for 7. He'll go 5 for 17.
Yeah. And that's the problem. If he takes 17 shots, like at least 14 of them are bad. And then
especially if your theory of getting Jokic on the bench, he's the guy. And I imagine that Edelman, the interim coach, probably has a similar level of respect for Russ and probably is going to play him more
minutes. You know what I'm saying? And he deserves it. So, you know, I mean,
unless, like I said, if he was kind of in line with the tune and the tone of the locker room and he's like, hey, I'm going to give Russ these minutes with Jokic because I think Jokic can make it work with Russ, and then I'm going to bring Russ and Jokic to the bench together.
So the magic number.
If he has a good smart move, like if you know he gets his Tyronn Lue on and he makes a good smart move like that, then maybe. But if he doesn't, then it's going to backfire.
So the magic number is 20. When Jamal Murray scores 20 points this season, the Nuggets are 24-11-11. When they don't, they're 17-15.
How is your shooting guard not getting 20 in that offense when the center is getting 11 assists?
Injuries and off year, you know. So, you know, it is what it is. So let's take it to the East, you know. So we'll take it from the top. Boston and Orlando. Mr. Logical, I'm feeling crazy right now.
Word.
Yeah. Give me Orlando and six. No, I'm just playing. But I am going to give Orlando two games. I think that Orlando is the gift and the curse. Because we always talk about, like, Donovan Mitchell got to try to get to the basket through Brown and Tatum, and then you got Porzingis waiting for you down there too. But Orlando actually has the dudes that can match up physically with Tatum and Brown, you know, Franz Wagner and Banchero. But the problem is, like, one problem is, I don't even know if Jaylen Brown's playing in this series or if he's starting the series at the very least. All right, so we know that Boston is going to shoot themselves out of a game. They didn't even sweep that Heat team last year without
They hit 23 threes one game.
I know it happens, right?
It took 23 threes.
But I also think that Orlando plays defense good enough to bother Boston. You know, Jason Tatum actually didn't play against Orlando this year, you know, somehow. Or I'm sorry, he didn't play in two of the three games. You know, so there's something to watch out for, you know, like another element. Can Orlando stop him? You know, but I think that this can get a little spicy if Orlando, my magic number for this is 106. I don't have a stat to back it up, but I just don't think Orlando can score 106. So if they do score 106, either Boston scored 140 or Orlando's got a chance to sneak a win. The moment might be too big for Cole Anthony and Anthony Black, even though without Jalen Suggs for the season, that's a big injury. Without him there, Anthony Black gets minutes that'll benefit Orlando, but next year, in the year after that, not right now. So, look, Boston is just too damn good. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. Like, I'm giving Orlando 2 off of the strength of their defense and Boston just having a bad shooting game at least once.
Yeah, I'm gonna give Orlando 1 just because I think they'll squeeze 1, maybe game 3 at home. Maybe even game 4.
Boston might be up 3-0. Yeah. They'll go up 3-0 and then lose game.
They'll go up 3-0, probably lose game 4, and then Boston will close it out, you know, up here in the Northeast. It just, like I said, I'm all about understanding, like, team dynamics and, like, the structure of a team. I just believe Boston has a team where roles are clearly defined and the roles that the people are in fit them. Yeah. Sometimes roles can be clearly defined and not fit, i.e. Phoenix. Like, your role is clearly defined. Like, this is what I want you to do, but you don't play to that expectation. You want to do something different. That's, like I said, that's what I feel about Denver, because your role is kind of defined through the coaching staff and having essentially a new coach in charge for less than a couple of weeks. I'm not sure if he can carve out enough real estate to understand, like, okay, Russ, this is what you're doing. Jamal Murray, this is what I need you to do, so forth and so on, down to the role players. I think Boston's role players clearly understand what the green light is, what the defensive strategy is, who to rotate to, who to defend the dribble drive to, like, who's responsible for this when this happens and this when this happens, to the point where offensively they're going to move the ball around to where this is a good shot. You got the guy, right, Cornette in the middle, that just, like, hey, I'm here to just be a big body, a presence. He will never get the ball and crossover dribble at the top of the key. It will never happen. He gets the pass, he sets the dribble handoff screen, and he rolls to the hoop. And if the lob comes to him, he jumps up, catches it, dunks it. If not, he tries to rebound, he gets the rebound, he kicks it out to Pritchard. And this is the second unit. So to have that kind of fluidity with the second unit, you know, it's like, it's not much you can do when the second unit is being talked about in a conversation on a talk show. Like, we're literally talking about how effective their second unit is and how well they operate. I don't think many teams have that level of, you know, just depth. And I think that's the boss. But like you said, they will give away one game because Orlando's just going to go 8 from 3. They'll go something like 21 for 48. And Boston's going to go 6 for 32.
Yeah.
And then they're going to go back home and close it out.
You know, so then in the trendy upset pick, You know, we got those bad boys coming from Motor City. Detroit going into the Garden. Mr. Logical. I done heard, I would say, if I've heard 20 people talk about this series, I've heard about 13 of them in Detroit. You joining the train?
Being that I'm in the tri-state area. I know when you jump on like a trendy upset, it normally means that it's been kind of exacerbated, like the extent of how good Detroit is versus New York. I just look at the history of Tibbs teams in the playoffs. I just feel as if the way they play, it's like an injury culmination that occurs in the postseason. I think Detroit plays smart. I think their coach is playing with a chip on his shoulder after getting fired out of Cleveland last year. I think he has some plan with the level of confidence. Malik Beasley is their sixth man of the year. He's their second best player, but he's coming off the bench. This one's going to go seven. And I don't want to like flip-flop, but I have a feeling that the Knicks are going to lose a guy just from exhaustion. Just a guy playing.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. I just feel like a guy's just going to play way too many minutes one game and won't be as spry the next game. Because, you know, like these early games are every other day. You know, so they'll probably tip off on the East Coast 7:05, 7:30, maybe 8. So you're going to have Josh Hart playing. We got 48 minutes in the NBA game. He's probably going to play 44 and a half. Jalen Brunson's probably going to play 40, 41.
He just got OG, back from injury.
OG's going to play 40. Like, all of them are going to play 40 minutes. And it's like, I think that could take a toll, especially with a physical team like Detroit. But because Detroit doesn't have, like, a second guy that starts, that, you know, same argument I have for Golden State not having that third guy, I'm going to go with the Knicks. I'm going to Knicks in seven. But it wouldn't surprise me if Detroit edged out because just a guy just misses game four because he just played fucking 45 minutes three games in a row.
How many fingers you got on your right hand?
Cinco.
Give me Knicks in five. So, like, this is the thing. Cade Cunningham's going to have a field day. You know, against the Knicks this year, you know, he's 31-5 with 8 assists, 56% from the floor, 52 from three. And this is why, you know, because obviously you can't necessarily guard him with Jalen Brunson, right?
So
I think about this, right? So let's just say I'm going to throw some names out there. So you got Josh Hart, you got OG Adonobi, you got Mikal Bridges. Cade Cunningham is their size, but he's a point guard. So, you know, so he's going to go to work.
And he weighs more.
And he weighs more.
Yeah, he weighs more.
But I don't know who that second person coming through the door is. I know Malik Beasley. You talked about him.
Yeah.
You know, second in the league in three-pointers this year, so they're going to need that. But I still need more, right? Because Adonobi on a given night could get you 27. You know, Mikal could get you 30.
Also on a given night miss a game because he played 44 and a half minutes in the game where they're up by 16.
Definitely.
And he's still on the floor.
Bridges could give you 30. You know
Bridges
I mean?
Is super healthy, though. Like, Bridges doesn't miss any time at all, ever.
Brunson could give you 30. You know, Josh Hart can grab 15 rebounds.
But Brunson, he plays, like, I'd hate to harp on his injuries, but we just saw it happen. Last year, in the series against Philly, when they could have closed it out at home, and Tyrese Maxey went eight. And hit like 8 points in the last, like, you know, 30 some seconds, something crazy
Miller
like that.
Style, yeah.
Yeah, it was like that was my problem with the Knicks. Is like you had a hobbled Joel Embiid put up 50. He couldn't go to his right.
You never doubled him.
He's a right-handed basketball player who couldn't go to his right. He weighs 300 pounds, and you were letting him shoot 20, 3 foot threes from the top of the key with no one running in his face. Knock him over. Like, just put a dude, put it like Tibbs. There's a dude down there in the jersey. Just put him in the game to defend Embiid. And if Embiid gets around him, bump him.
And make them
make him roll. Make him roll on the floor and get up.
Yeah.
Get two fouls on him and take that guy out. But give Josh Hart fucking 5 minutes. But it's like you never employed that. And that's the thing I think was gonna happen. I think Tibbs is one of these guys like, listen, the overhand right's gonna land. I'm gonna keep throwing it. And they're like, yo, coach, can we just throw this jab real quick? No, the overhand right's gonna land. We're gonna keep throwing it. And eventually it will land. But if you keep missing and you getting jabbed back, that's the part. I just don't think he adjusts well. And I think in those games where like that game where they could have closed out in the guard in front of Patrick Ewing, he didn't make adjustments and they end up going back to Philly.
And we didn't even mention Big Kitty yet. You know, he can get you 30 on a given night, you know, even though he doesn't normally show up in the playoffs. So that's what you're hoping for if you're Detroit, is that he continues to be what he is, right? So in the regular season, Detroit went 3-1 against the Knicks. But one of those games was without Kitty and Mitchell Robinson. Another one of those games was without Hart, Adonobi, and Mitchell Robinson. So now you got to deal with the Knicks full time. But to your point, do they have the gas in the tank? That's the only question I have in this series. I think they should win this series rather easily, just because I think Kay Cunningham is the only one that should get off. Yeah.
The easy part is like that's. I think that's the. They should win it easily. I just watched them make. I watched them make the Philly series more difficult than it needed to be, and then I watched them lose to the Pacers when they shouldn't have. The Pacers proved really tough. Like I said, they almost knocked off Boston in game one, but I just feel like the strategy of play till your heart explodes is going to have a negative impact for Coach Tibbs.
Right. So speaking of the Pacers, you know, they got Milwaukee in what's becoming, I guess, a bit of a rivalry, you know, 5-5 in their last 10 against each other, you know, Indiana 8, Milwaukee 7 in the last 15. You know, the Pacers knocked them out the playoffs last year, but of course, there wasn't a lot of Giannis or Dame in that series. So
Right. We
already got word that Dame's not playing game one, but he will be back at some point during the series. The Bucks just got Bobby Portis back from his suspension. You know, I loved his quote talking about, you know, I've been robbed, I've been this and that, been suspended. Like
my grandma died.
Yeah, like let's just play ball. Like, so I like that focus. Of course, you know where I'm going to start with my problems. My problems is the midwife, Glenn Rivers. You know, one, is he going to play the right people? Because, you know, I saw Pat Connaughton go off of 43-11 the other day. It's like, okay, like, why don't you deploy him a little bit more? You know, they're going to have to rely on Kyle Kuzma, Gary Trent, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., who, you know, has been playing well lately, but we're talking about the playoffs now. You know, yeah. I think that Indiana has a player that is just so underappreciated. He goes by the name of Pascal Siakam. You know, he's an NBA champion. You know, I know Kawhi was the leader. I know Kawhi gets the credit. But Pascal played a great series in that series, and he never gets the credit for it.
And he never had to guard Kevin Durant.
Yeah, he had to guard Kevin Durant.
No, he never had to guard Kevin Durant.
That's what I meant to say. He was doing up Draymond, is what I meant to say.
There's no ring of Kevin Durant. So
this is the problem Indiana's going to run into. You know what I mean? So Siakam, you know, guarded Giannis at some point over 130 possessions this season. And I got this from Yahoo Sports. About 130 possessions this season. A total of 27 minutes total. When he was being guarded by Siakam, Giannis went 22 for 33.
66%.
66%. So that's the problem that the Pacers are going to run into, because Giannis is already a load to try to stop on, you know, by itself. But then
he dunks shots that they shouldn't be finger rolls. Yeah, they should be finger rolls. And it's like, how did you?
You can't put Miles Turner on him. You know what I mean? You can't. So like, I don't know if
you can't build a wall like people said you should. Yeah, be able to do.
Like, I don't know if you play around with the lineups and tinker a little bit. Maybe you guard him. You put some athleticism on him and guard him with Obi Toppin. You know, I know that Halliburton has been playing back to where he was last year before the injury over the last couple of months or so. Very quiet. You already know. Obviously, I'm picking the Pacers to win this series because I picked the Pacers to beat Cleveland in the second round. So, you know, but this is going seven. This is going seven. And if
that's one, well, I agree with.
Well, okay. Let me back up a little bit. It depends on when Dame comes back. You know, if Dame is back for game two, then Milwaukee might find themselves down 2-0 because they got to reintegrate him back into the offense. You know, and he's got to get his basketball rhythm back. And that's a lot. I know he's a vet, but that's a lot to ask in a playoff series against a team.
I think a guy like Dame, like how we talked about Luka, I think Dame is the guy that they'll just run a pick and roll and he'll shoot the three from 28. Two or three times.
But I need him to be in rhythm, though.
That's what, no. He'll like, listen, just go out there, early pick and roll, just pull up from 27, see if it goes in. Go in, try it again. And then if you do that three times, eventually they're going to have to jump out and guard you, keep you dribble, get in line, get in the paint, get bumped, get to the free throw line. I think he'll be able to get in rhythm early because I think his game is very fluid. Mm-hmm. He doesn't overthink it. He doesn't overdo it. You know how like Ja seems to always be aggressively attacking the hoop and gets knocked down? Dame just seems to be under control a lot. Like even if he comes off that pick and roll stop, gets you on his hip. A lot like how Trae Young plays.
All right,
a little bit more control. I just think the Giannis factor, like sometimes I know in the NBA we have team versus player, but sometimes just rolling the ball out there and having the best player on the floor is your advantage.
Okay.
And I think Giannis, I think his ability to just go to, he plays a way that says to you as a defense, this guy isn't enough. Whoever you put on me isn't enough. And if you roll another guy to me and I can get around him too, now I know you can't fuck with me. And it's going to be one of those 34, 11 rebounds, 8 assists kind of series for Giannis.
All right. So to close this out, sounds like we both got Pacers in seven.
No, I got Bucks.
Oh, yeah, Bucks and seven.
I got Bucks and seven. Because like I said, I think Giannis just off just strength of being Giannis can get you one in Indiana. And you're going back to Milwaukee. Say Dame doesn't play. Say they want Dame to stay at his house in Milwaukee and rest.
Be ready for game three.
Be ready for game three. I think that information, understand, like, listen, Giannis, we're riding you for the next two games. Lead us to victory. We're going to get Dame back in game three, home game, home crowd, energy, you know, all the stuff to kind of take the jitters away. He's going to knock down a couple of big threes, and then they're going to be off and rolling. I just have a feeling like I just don't have the faith in Indiana. Because I think they're a lot like the Knicks, where it's just like you're going to have a good run, but I don't think you're dynamic enough to just like overcome another team's best player, just really fire it off.
Okay. All right. So as we close this up, I got a couple of rapid fire questions for you.
Let's hear it.
Is Dame Lillard overrated?
No, because I'm not sure where do people have him rated? He's in the top 75, right?
Yeah. Which I don't think he should be in, but.
I mean, who would you put in, like Dwight Howard? I think if you took him out, you put Dwight Howard. But I think in the same case, someone would be like, well, you could slide Anthony Davis out because just as an individual player.
No, Tony Parker should have probably been in there.
As an individual player, was Tony Parker really that guy? Was he just really good catalyst on that team? Really similar. Like Tim MVP. Duncan was that guy.
He's got a finals MVP.
So does Andre Iguodala. He's not a top 75.
You know that wasn't the same, though. Tony Parker's MVP ain't the same as Iguodala's. All right, second question. What is the best that the Pelicans can get for Zion?
Ooh. trying to think.
Because I don't imagine you're getting a first-round pick for him.
You're absolutely getting the first. You're getting a better deal for Zion than Dallas got for Luka. Just if I'm a GM, if I'm the Pelicans GM, I'm not accepting anything less than what Dallas got.
You know who the Pelicans new president of basketball operations is, right?
Joe Dumars.
Joe Dumars. Another
retread. You think he hooks up his old team?
Maybe. Maybe.
You're gonna get a haul, I imagine. Like I said, so Luka went for AD. Who else is in that package? Max Christie.
But the Lakers also got the Morris twin.
One of the Morris twins.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I imagine that. I mean, I don't know who would I personally wouldn't trade for Zion. Okay. But I figure that if I'm a GM, if I'm the Pelicans GM, I'm not taking a worse deal than whatever the consensus is on the status of that deal. However, the GMs rate the deal between LA and Dallas to make the AD Luka trade happen. I'm not taking anything anywhere near that. My shit's going to be way more upper echelon than that. At a minimum, even if I don't think we deserve it, I'm not taking anything close to that, because you're not going to be firing me in the stadium and chanting that game one.
Is tomorrow Trae Young's last game as a Hawk?
Absolutely.
No question?
No question about it, because it's like he's been there with 7 seasons. They made the 1 Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not sure if they were patient enough to build a team around him or if they were too quick to pull the trigger and move bodies away. But it doesn't seem as if they're building not even a contender, upper echelon contending team. Like, not like, oh, this team's going to win the championship, but can you get me a team where we can consistently be playing for 51 or 52 wins? Well, can I go 52 and 30?
I think at this point you have to build around Risha Shea. You drafted him number one. He showed you some flashes late in the season that I don't know if he can develop the way that you would want him to with Trey there. That's number one. Number two, you know, I've been talking about these aprons and luxury taxes and all this kind of stuff. So you got Risha Shea on a young deal, you know, obviously right now because he's a rookie. Correct. But you got to fill in the rest of the roster at some point, you know, like as well. So Trae Young's contract probably makes that hard to do. So I think you have
The NBA contracts, they're a little easier, but I think he's the only one getting the major deal. Yeah, like I said,
put a cap on yourself, what you could bring in, because you got to think about what fits with him versus, you know, Risha Shea.
That's the thing. He's one of the league leaders in assists for like the last 5 years.
He is.
Between 10 and 12 assists. Like, so you're getting opportunities off of his play. It's not as if he's a, like, SGA only averages about 5 assists.
No, but it's that thing, right? You keep running into the wall and expecting that you're going to knock it down at some point.
But I don't think Trae Young is the reason you're running to the wall. I think you're running into the wall because you're not putting the pieces around him
he's still a little guard, you know what I mean? Like, so he's doing what he's doing, and he's an awesome player. I'm not trying to take that away from him, but you know, the league is kind of getting away from dudes like him as far as like height wise and all that.
It's a lot, yes. All the sports are doing it. Like, we talked about baseball, the average guy's like 6'3, 220 that's getting drafted into baseball.
So, can he still score enough to balance out his defensive inequalities?
Well, yeah, if I'm 28 points and 10 assists, you're thinking maybe half of those are three. So I'm anywhere between, I'm getting you 48 to 58 points a night just off me being on the floor. Me, one person. I'm creating 58 points potentially every single night I'm out there. You just got to get the rookie that you draft has to work out. You know what I mean? It has to fit what we are doing as an offense. Because I don't think he slows it down. Like I said, the amount of assists that he averages is proof that he's moving the ball around. if he was averaging 32 and a half and five assists and they won 37 games, it's like, okay, you're literally just shooting the ball up as much as you want. But he's an efficient player. He's just small and he's good. And they had that run to the Eastern Conference Finals. And now that's their new floor, you know, at least for the couple of years after that. But they never built anything around it. It's like, okay, we got this floor now. This is where we are. And it's like, no, you need to maintain that. But they just got rid of pieces. They traded guys at Utah. They fired the coach. They brought in a new coach. It's like you have to look yourself in the mirror as an organization and say, are we doing right by our star player? And if not, make a move, start over. It's nothing wrong with starting over. Just, like I said, just don't be so tied up with the Luka deal. Just get a better deal than Luka in Dallas. That's all you got to do. And Grizzlies, your fans will be like, you know, we'll get it.
Grizzlies, Mavs, who you got?
Grizzlies, Mavs. Does Ja want to go on vacation?
Like, I feel like I should pick Memphis, but I just don't like the vibes right now.
Yeah, I'll take the Mavs. I think.
Okay,
people are done. Yeah,
is tomorrow night Ja's last game in a Grizzlies jersey?
I mean, if we're looking at this offseason's potentially Trae Young moving, Zion moving, and Ja Morant moving, I just don't know if there's enough teams that are like willing to kind of dismantle their team to bring in a guy and then pay him a lot of money. Cause I think they're all due extensions within the next 12 months. Either if it's not this season, the conversation is going to happen next summer for at least all three of those players. Phoenix has old assets. I don't know if that move works. Chicago, maybe they're in the Ja Morant sweepstakes because I think they have enough.
He can't act right in Memphis. He damn sure ain't going to act right in Chicago.
Oh, he'll act right when somebody run up on him. he'll understand it's not cool just to be in certain parts.
So if you were the Memphis GM and Atlanta called you and said, I'll give you Trae Young for Ja, what would you tell them?
We'll make that work.
Okay.
We can make it work. Yeah.
And then last question.
You can keep your offense the same. You keep, you know, like, I'll make it work.
Last question. You changing your finals prediction?
Oh, my OKC Boston?
Yeah, since we're doing our preview right now, you know, you changing your finals, you changing the winner. Last chance.
I don't think I picked the winner yet. I don't think I picked the winner. I got OKC Boston, and I want to see how these first rounds go.
All right, well, I'm still sticking with OKC over Boston. And, you know, hopefully it goes seven. So, there you have it, folks. There's our playoff preview. We will be back on Tuesday. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Nico out here losing money probably.
You know, shout out to Nico for grabbing the bull by the horn. Sometimes it hits you. Sometimes it nick you, but hold on, go for it. Like, listen, if you want to be where you want to be, don't let these people in the media shoot you down. Got that golden right arm and that long hair. Take it to Cali, get your commercials. You'll get your $1.7 million off of other stuff.
Shout out to Fran Brown because he ain't giving no wide receiver no damn $2 million.
Yeah, not upstate New York.
You know what I'm saying? Shout out to the Cal Golden Bears because Ron Rivera was my head coach and I wanted to leave my team. So now that Ron Rivera is the GM at Cal, all these Cal players, all their running backs joined the transfer portal, all of them. So, you know, good job, Ron. But we'll be back on Tuesday, y'all. Do the right thing and don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
He is Mr. Logical. I am 2-5. We love you. So like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things while you sipping on your liquid death. Peace.